Welcome back to another episode of the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was in a 32-year relationship, married for 30 years, and didn't find out that my ex was on the spectrum until our 29th year of marriage. And I'm here with Olga.
And I'm Olga, and I was in a relationship with a neurodivergent person that lasted around almost a year.
And our third co-host, Manisa.
Hi, guys. It's Manisa. I am currently in a marriage with someone with Asperger's. We've been together for 8 years, been married for 6 years, and found out that we were neurodiverse in around year, maybe four.
Awesome. Well, we're thrilled to be here today, and we have a really important topic to discuss. And we've touched on it a little bit in past episodes, but we're going to go a little bit more in depth. And that is the diversity of how neurodiverse partners handle emotions. And I will start and talk about some of the things that I saw. We did an episode on meltdowns and shutdowns, and I want to talk a little bit more about that and just emotions in general. And one of the things that always surprised me and made me question what I was doing wrong, really, is whenever I shared my emotions with my ex, oftentimes he would look at me like he didn't quite understand what I was trying to get across to him. And I thought that I was communicating very clearly. And I thought that I might have been emotional, but, you know, we all get emotional periodically. I might have been screaming, but, you know, I grew up in a family where everybody screams, so that was normal to me. But my ex would oftentimes not engage in any kind of screaming with me. When we would fight, usually I was the loud one. Pretty much always I was the loud one. And I was the one who kept the conversation going. And what I would do is not only would I oftentimes be loud and emotional, I also would, turns out, flood him with multiple topics. And I realize now that I overwhelmed him. And I think not only did he shut down because he couldn't hear anymore, it was just too much for him. And I did not know this. But also, I think he always wanted to do what was best and to help resolve the issue. But it was almost like he was lost in a forest and couldn't, in a way, find his way out of the emotional forest. And it became, I'm sure, extremely challenging for him. It was very challenging for me too, but now that I know we were neurodiverse, I understand it on a whole different level. Emotions were always very difficult for him. He grew up in a home where his father did a lot of screaming, and I saw that often, and so that had to be difficult for him to come into a relationship with somebody who screamed. But again, I didn't know all about the neurodiversity, so I didn't realize what I was doing. In addition, I was really comfortable with talking about any topic, whether I was screaming or I was emotional, it didn't matter. I could talk about any topic. Being a social worker, that's really easy for me. But that wasn't the case for him. I think there were certain topics that were so emotional, it was very difficult for him to address them. And again, didn't know that. And now I would definitely do things differently, knowing that we're neurodiverse. What about you, Manisa? How do you handle when discussions get emotional, or how does your husband handle that?
You know, this is the thorn in our marriage. It is the one thing that if our marriage were to end, it would be because of this. Me expressing my emotions and being dismissed. Mm. This is something that we battle with, you know, today. It's difficult when you yourself are, you know, the neurotypical has these emotions, can identify the emotions, can express the emotions. And then when they're expressed, nothing is done with them. Mm. And you're just left feeling abandoned, emotionally abandoned. And I trick myself in saying, okay, I'm going to say it this way this time. I'm going to make sure it's the right time of day. I'm going to make sure that I preface it with, I'm not upset with you. I'm not angry with you, but none of that works. Mm. And so for me, I don't want to get to the point where I say, I'm just not going to express any emotions around my husband, because that's not realistic.
Right.
And I did read somewhere that over time, when the neurotypical partner goes to his or her Aspie spouse with those emotions and those emotions are not dealt with, that over time, the neurotypical starts to act like the Aspie. Mm-hmm. They become unemotional. They become disengaged. They begin to shut down and withdraw, but they're doing it for a different reason. They're doing it for a different reason because they're angry. Right. And they need an outlet to express. But I'll tell you, some of the things that we've done is me expressing to him what my thoughts are versus my feelings. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of get the conversation going that way. There are a lot of conversations that we have, and I'll say to him, do you understand how you made me feel? And he will say, no, I don't. And then I'll say, but you can communicate to me how something I did made you feel. So how can you not flip, the coin over and see it from the other side? But we all know, because of mind blindness,
right,
the inability to be able to see someone else's point of view, because with autism, things happen in templates. And well, he can see it from his point of view because it was a situation that happened. It has specific variables. But if one variable is changed as it relates to me, he's not able to see how they go together.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And again, talking to so many, mostly women, and knowing that they're struggling with the same thing, and it makes you, or I can only speak for myself, it made me feel like he didn't care. Mm-hmm. And that he wasn't empathic, or some people say empathetic. That's not the case at all. I know that's not the case, because oftentimes what would happen is we'd get in a fight, he would shut down because my emotions were too much, and then he might go to work, and then when he came home, he would bring me a gift.
Yes, yes.
And I'll give you examples. So one of my favorite chocolate bars is a Snickers. So he'd come home from work with the extra large Snickers bar, or I don't have a sweet tooth so much anymore, but I did then, and he'd go to this place that I liked the cake, and he'd buy me a piece of cake, and he'd bring it home. And I would get so angry at him because he thought that if he brought home one of my favorite things, the issue that I was upset about would be gone.
Yeah.
And I understand now that, and I'm going to use a bad word. No, I'll say I effed up, mm-hmm. because that was him he was extending the olive branch. And I thought it was his way of avoiding the issue. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was his way of responding in as emotional a way as he could, showing me he loved me, he cared about me, he knows what my favorite chocolate or cake is, and please kind of forgive me. And he would almost always say, I'm sorry, I don't know what I did. And that would get me even more pissed. Mm-hmm. and so it was a never-ending cycle. He also would buy me cards, and they would be cards with, you know, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I wish I could make it better. I wish I could go back in time. I've saved every card that he ever gave me because, you know, we were together 32 years and I love the cards because they were great. But again, it didn't address the initial issue that got me so emotional. And so we had that communication roundabout. And we've talked about that before, where we never resolved the issue that I was so emotional about because he couldn't handle my emotions. He thought he was making up to me by bringing me my favorite whatever. And I thought he didn't care. And it was really toxic, really toxic. And like you say, if Manisa, your relationship ends, this may be the reason. I think because of this, we just kept getting more and more toxic.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Olga?
Yeah, it is definitely a very complex topic because, you know, you are in a relationship. It is an emotional relationship. So that's what we are there for, like to leave this emotional reciprocity where, you know, we love each other. We understand, well, at least that's what the ideal is in your head, that you have a partner, that someone that's going to listen to you and love you and support you, and, you know, this idealistic relationship in your head. And then you get into the relationship and you find that, you know, in my case, he would have a script that he would use every time I was sad or I was going through a frustrating moment, and so he will be okay going through it because he knew what to say. Mm-hmm. But really, like months later, he'll come up and say, you know, I really didn't understand when you were going through this, and I apologize for it because I really didn't get what you were feeling. And now that I went through this situation where now I understand how hard it is, I just wanted to apologize to you. But it took months and sometimes years for certain topics for him to be able to come back and say, huh, now I understand what you were going through. And because we both were going through a lot at the same time when we were together. So processing all of that has taken a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And but like he survived the moments with what we call the script because he knew what to say for the moment. But I could see how overwhelming it was for him to express his own feelings. And he did it. He would cry also. He'll get very, very emotional. I am having an anxiety attack because I feel like you're not doing this, or I wanted to do this and now I can't do it. And I don't know how to get out of this cycle, mm-hmm. like this cycle of you're not doing what I'm expecting you to do, but I don't know. I don't want to bother you. I don't want you to do something for me that you don't want. It was just this whole thing analysis that he was doing in his head. And it became so overwhelming that it stopped us from being able to come out of it with a strategy so that he felt like I cared about what he was going through. So it's very complicated. But even though I knew, you know, what was going on and that we were neurodiverse, I didn't have all the tools either to be able to communicate and or to give him the space or to, you know, we were very respectful. We never fought it. We never disrespected each other or anything that negative. It would be the opposite. It would be just very sad and we'll cry and we'll, you know, he'll be able, you know, to cry and express, especially if it's his, you know, moment of anxiety and I don't know what to do with this. And he'll cry and get very vulnerable at that point. And that was my point where I could kind of free him from whatever was the situation was. But it took, all I was thinking about is in many, many aspects of the relationship, it took months and years for him to understand where I was at, why it was hurtful for me, and that he didn't do what could have saved, you know, the relationship at that point. So it's very complex.
It is complex. Yeah, Manisa, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, because, you know, I told you all that my mind has to make sense of things. So I know this is probably a rhetorical question, but I think it's worth discussing. Why is it that we need them to know what they did and why it hurt? Like, can we answer that individually? Like, Mona, why did you want your husband to be able to identify without you telling him? Why was that important to you?
For me, it was validation that he was respecting my point of view, that he thought it was okay for me to feel the way I felt, mm-hmm. and for me to have a difference of opinion or see the issue differently than him. I needed that validation. I realized, and it's a great question, Manisa. I realized that we were codependent. I needed that from him because it was kind of an extension of something I didn't get from my father, who was also on the spectrum. The only time my father validated me was when I performed at the level he wanted me to perform in school. Mm-hmm. Anything else, I never got like recognition, or he wasn't, you know, emotional or whatever. And I think I was looking for that in my ex. And at times, especially before we had our child, he could give that to me at times. But I noticed that after we had our daughter, it was less and less and less. And like Olga said, when he did give it to me, it was oftentimes a script. Like, mm-hmm. what can I do? What did I do? How can I make it better? And I'm like, you don't know? You don't know what you did?
Right.
You should know what you did. Yeah. I just have to tell you.
Exactly.
You know, anybody would know what you did, you know? And I would even call my daughter out from her room and I'd explain what happened. I was so upset. I'd explain what happened. I'd be like, what do you think happened here, you know? Mm-hmm. What do you think was daddy's role? What do you think was mommy's role? And I know I shouldn't have done that. But again, my emotions would go through the roof. And she is a mini, she's a mini version of my ex in a lot of ways. She understands his thinking. We've always said that if she would have gotten diagnosed when she was younger, she probably would have been on the spectrum. But, you know, with 24 years of coaching from me, she's been able to learn different ways of functioning that are probably more neurotypical. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's a great question. I think validation and recognition that I wasn't wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What about you, Olga?
Well, I have like two stages in that. So when we were in the relationship, initially it was like, if he understands it, admits that he knows what I'm going through and validates it, is more like he sees me, mm-hmm. like I'm part of this relationship too, mm-hmm. and it's not a one-sided relationship. It's like one person just holding everything and understanding and going through it. And so for me, it was very important to feel like he understands and okay, here, you know, I also made mistakes and you made mistakes, and even though we went through them gently, because that was always like the goal. Like, we can be gentle with each other, even though we are going through something that's really hard. But it's still, I needed that validation and that feeling that, you know, it's the two of us, not just one. But then when we started healing from the breakup and all of that, I realized that I really didn't need him to do that, because it wasn't my, I don't even know if this is going to sound maybe crazy.
Say it.
But in my personal growth, lately, I've been finding that you really need to understand yourself. Like, I need to understand myself, and I need to understand my feelings and where they're coming from and what my reactions are, where they are, and how I, you know, I'm going through what I'm going through. And his path is his path. And I can't force him. I couldn't force him to understand in my time. Right. And it was draining to expect him to do it in my time. Mm-hmm. But it was beautiful to see him on his own time, realize things, come back to me, even when we were not together anymore, and say, hey, I'm sorry for this. Now I understand it because I went through this, and now I understand how hard it is. And now I can respect more and more his own path, especially because he does a lot of the homework. He does a lot of therapy, a lot of reading, a lot of personal growth. And it's his path. It's his, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in my next relationship. I don't know how this is going to feel when I am facing maybe someone else that's also on the spectrum. But even when we are different in this way, neurologically, each one has a path. And being compassionate and loving and caring, respecting each other's path, I think it's the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized I didn't need to do it. I didn't need him to do it on my time. I would have liked to have the time to do it together and see the growth, but life just, you know, got in the way. But I would love to have the opportunity to see that. I don't know if I'm romanticizing it or idealizing it, or I don't know, but I've seen the growth. I just didn't see it in the relationship.
Well, I thank you for sharing that perspective, Olga, because I really needed to hear that. You know, I have a relationship coaching business called Exhale, because that's the goal that I want women to get. You know, when they are going through something and it's difficult and they can't manage it, and they finally find, you know, that aha moment, they exhale, they release it. And I have been trying to control my husband's journey. I have been trying to get him to, well, no, you do understand what you did. And I'm going to tell you why you understand, because you did this and you did that, you know. And Mona's right. It absolutely shoots me right in the foot. It does not help me progress even further, but it's, our behaviors are so out of control because we're trying to answer those three questions that Oprah always says everybody wants to know, which are, do you see me? Mm-hmm. Do you hear me? And do I matter? Mm-hmm. And if you see me and you hear me and I matter, then you should know, right? That right. Should. You should know what you did. Look right. At me. I'm a wreck. Do you think I just did this to myself? you know, and... Yeah. You are absolutely right, Olga, that we cannot control another person's response to us, but we can definitely control how long we want to deal with that response. Absolutely. You know, I always say that pain is inevitable. Everybody on planet Earth is going to experience pain.
Yeah.
But suffering is optional. You know, right. We don't have to suffer.
Right.
And I think that's where everybody, male or female, who's in a newer diverse relationship, at some point they get to that place where they say, I don't think I want to choose to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Because it is a choice.
Right. And Olga and I were talking about that a little bit before we signed on with you. I think what is sad for me sometimes is to see couples who are neurodiverse and neither one is happy. And you can just tell. They mm-hmm. have nothing positive or loving or caring to say about their partner. They are both struggling. They are in pain. And neither one of them wants to either do the work that's necessary to move on or do the work on themselves. And then as a couple, however long that takes, to move the relationship in a more healthy direction. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I so get it. Absolutely. Because I was going for therapy. I was reading the books. I was doing all of that to attempt, and it was an attempt to get a hold of my emotions. But every time I was triggered by what I felt was my ex not caring about my emotions or what I was feeling, which again, I think he cared too much, but didn't know how to handle it. It set me back. Mm-hmm. And so I'd find another book or another YouTube video, mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. you know, talk about it with my therapist or whatever. And I think I posted on Instagram today something about this, because I think that the challenge is so many people don't want to leave their relationships because they still love their partner, but they don't know what the best tools are to work through the issues that they're struggling with, literally sometimes on an hourly basis, but definitely on a daily basis. And that's why, you know, I wanted to start the podcast and I wanted to start the Instagram account and do the website, because I think we need these resources available to men and women who are in neurodiverse relationships, so they can, so both partners can understand each other and feel like they're of value to their partner.
Yes.
Validation is a different thing. You know, I don't need validation from my partner anymore. And being with my ex really helped me with that. But right. I do want to feel like I'm of value.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean to me in my next relationship? I'll have to figure that out. I'll know. What does it mean to my ex in the relationship that he's in now? I don't know. You know, it's probably very different than what he needed in our relationship. And I think as we do the work, and we figure out how our emotions are expressed differently with our neurodiverse partners, and we don't expect them to be us, we can grow and heal.
I like that.
Right?
I love that.
so go ahead.
Yeah, because I was thinking when Manisa was saying the three questions, thinking, okay, so maybe the three questions make sense for a neurotypical person. How can we ask those three questions to a neurodivergent person? Mm-hmm. Is that mm-hmm. the way to ask those three questions to a neurodivergent mm-hmm. person? Or can we ask, because I'm sure they do see us, they do hear us, and we do matter to them. It's just how they see us, how they hear us, and how we matter to them, and how, you know, I get the feeling that many times I was in the temptation of bringing him to my way to see things and do things and understand life. And can you just adapt yourself to what I, you know, what I am, because I can't understand what you are, because I can't relate, because I don't live in your brain, and I wish I could, so I could understand what you're going through, what you're thinking, when you're in, what you're feeling, but I can't. So I am as, you know, challenged there as he is, because he does not understand me, he doesn't live in my brain, and he doesn't know why I'm asking him to do or understand or say something that doesn't come out of him, because it's not natural to him. So, okay, the question again is how are we inclusive this way? And this episode is going to leave me with more questions than lessons learned. I think it's a work in progress, because it's we're trying to figure it out. Is this possible? Is it possible to make it work and make it last? And the key to it is, how do we get into this emotional balance where we both get what we need, we grow together, and we can love each other for a long time and stay together and stay sane? Because I'm sure that the same frustrations or the feelings, the negative feelings that we feel, that they may feel different feelings, but they're also overwhelming and negative.
Yes.
So how can we reconcile the two brains, the how the other person thinks and feels and how I feel and think as a neurotypical person. So again, how can we ask those three questions to them that we get the answers that we need or that we want, and they're the true answers and not the script?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Manisa, did you want to respond to that? Because I have one other thing I want to add.
I just want you to know that right now I am receiving the best free therapy that I've ever had.
Well, this is what Olga and I've been doing. Olga,
I mean, I was having a rough day today. I mean, like, tears about to just roll down my eyes at any moment. Mm. But because I am the person that I am, I always go inside, become introspective, reflect. You know, I know that anger serves me no good at all because, you know, I've been angry for so many years and it didn't get me anywhere. So I already know that doesn't work. So I try a different approach. And, you know, to hear you just say that one sentence, it was just like the you remember in The Wizard of Oz at the very beginning when Dorothy got caught up in the hurricane and the movie was in black and white.
Uh-huh.
And then she landed in Munchkin Land. And do you remember what happened when she opened the door and the movie was now in color?
Yes.
That's how I feel when Olga said, we have to go on our own journey. And I know we know these things intellectually, right, but I heard it in my soul today.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, you know, I it got out of my brain today and it went in my soul. Like, that's I cannot awesome. Spend the rest of my marriage trying to fix my husband.
Amen, sister.
You know, I just thank you, Olga. I mean, really, okay. Thank you.
That is awesome. So let's take it to the next level. Let's take what Olga said, and how would those three questions possibly be answered by us as the neurotypical partner, and how would those questions be answered by our neurodivergent partners? So the first one is, do you see me?
Mm-hmm.
So how we see them may depend on whether they're responding to us when we're emotional, right? Let's just talk about emotion, right? We see that, or I'm going to speak for myself. I saw my ex as not caring. I didn't think he saw me when I was emotional. But the fact of the matter is, he saw me and he was trying to come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. He wanted to figure out what he could do to make things better. So he saw me, but he couldn't verbalize it. So how could he have told me that he saw me when I was emotional? Right? And I don't know what he could have said. I hear you're emotional.
But it might not happen the same, like what I'm getting, because, you know, we've talked about people after my ex that I started dating were possibly also on the spectrum. And all now I'm thinking about that. And they want to be able to respond right away. It takes a little bit, but later I could hear things like, oh, I'm going to do this because I know you feel this when I do this. And it's like their ability to analyze things and come up with like a whole theory about why you're doing what you're doing. And that told me, oh my God, he knows me. Like, how do you know that about me?
But how long did it take? Because
sometimes it doesn't take that long. Sometimes it takes like, well, it's not in the moment. That's the problem. And we're expecting it in the moment.
Right.
But if we learn that it will happen at some point, maybe we don't have to have the discussion right there. And we can move on to whatever, you know.
How? That's the question.
Because it's not.
Think about you're in the moment. And let's just process this one. And we don't have to process the others. But think about that. You're in the moment. You're not feeling, you can combine the two. You're not feeling heard and you're not feeling seen. And the same thing that Olga's saying would happen with her ex would happen with mine. But it wasn't hours that he would get back to me. And
no,
I knew
days.
It was days. he would come back and literally, Manisa, repeat almost verbatim what I said to him, that I wanted him to hear 3 days earlier.
And then you're like,
why couldn't you have done this 3 days earlier? Mm-hmm. And so I know other neurotypical women feel the same way that are in our support groups. And again, how do we know they've seen us and heard us on their terms?
So in the moment, I think that probably will be in the little anxiety to fix it. Like, I want to fix it, but I don't know how to. So that tells me I matter to you, but you don't know how to fix it right now. So I'm going to take that for now, and we're going to de-escalate whatever is happening now. And we're going to try to, you know, move on to the next step, which is what practically we have to do to resolve this situation. We both are going to go back and reflect individually. And at some point, we're going to come together and say, hey, but if we do the process individually, and that's where I was getting before, we will find peace, because in every situation in life, you would find peace inside, because you can't depend on people doing the right thing for you to find peace.
That's right.
I agree with you. However, this is the challenge. I think this is the challenge that I've had. And Olga and I've talked about this. It's very different when you've been in a relationship for a year versus 32 years. So yes, let me just share this. Yes. So because the pattern kept repeating itself, I couldn't understand. I couldn't get past that 3 days later he could get it, but he couldn't get it in the moment. Now I understand, because I know we're neurodiverse, but it just kept eating away at the trust and the respect that I had for him. And I'm sure that I'm not alone in that. However, I love what you're saying, Olga, about each going our separate ways. I realize that I would fight and fight and fight and fight and get emotional and emotional, emotional, sometimes for hours, Manisa.
Oh, I know.
And it resolved nothing. He went into further shutdown, further overload. He would not talk, and I would just keep going. Mm-hmm. Crying, hysterical, possibly threatening divorce. Who knows? You know, depending on what day it was.
Stealing remotes to your computer and stuff so you can't use it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. No, I never had that one.
But, taking wires. I do. I understand.
You know, there, I can laugh about it now because I'm not with him right now. Mm-hmm. But I've learned what Olga's talking about, that the man that I dated after my divorce, when he would get, when he would have meltdowns, I would look at him and I would say, it's okay. And I didn't get caught up in his tornado. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I wouldn't go there. And I'd say, I'm going to go lie down. I'm going to go read. And if you want to talk in the future, you know, about any of this, let me know. If there's anything I can do for you, let me know. So I had learned. Mm-hmm. So instead of carrying on with my ex for hours, what I should have done was, clearly, we're both not hearing each other at this time. Let's take a break and let's go to separate rooms or whatever. And let's talk about this tomorrow.
Right.
Or whenever the next you're day. Ready. Yes, because the tomorrow may not work for him or may not work for me. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, also, right. We didn't have the opportunity to do any of this in our relationships. So they were accumulation of, in my case, it was a year, in your case, was many, many years of managing things in a way that only escalated and only created more frustration and pain and suffering. So there was not an opportunity to break the cycle of suffering. So if we think about that and try to evaluate what we're thinking now, it may not work, because that was not the, we can't fix what we went through years ago.
No.
So now Manisa can try and see what would be the translation and all of this in real life? Because I know I'm talking from, again, a very short relationship and a long process of, you know, digesting all of this and trying to break down every little piece and understanding it and doing
and heal doing therapy, and grow.
Yeah. Doing therapy together, overthinking, and a little bit of wine involved.
Yes. And I can tell you just, you know, for my relationship, my marriage, is that what I've learned and I'm still learning about my husband is that, you know, that should know, you should know. They don't know. They do not have the intuition and the instinct to know, okay, she's crying. This is what I should do. Or she's sad. This is what I should do. They don't know what to do intuitively. They need a prompt, like, I need you to hold me, or can you hold me, or, you know, will you just tell me everything is going to be okay, or just sit with me, hold my hand. Mm-hmm. Now, if they know that there is something that you enjoy or that you like, you know, hence the Snicker bar,
right?
Then that's your go-to, because that's known. Like for me, so I have eczema, but I have it in my scalp and I have it on my back, which are just dry patches, but they literally feel like someone just dumped 1,000 ants on you and they're just crawling all over. Ooh. I mean, the itching is insane. So one of the things that my husband will do for me when he's trying to fix it, you know, is he'll say, go get your stuff. And what that means is your comb and your peppermint and eucalyptus oil so that I could scratch and grease your hair. Because that makes me feel good. Oh. And so, but he's done that, gosh, I don't know, hundreds of times. But that's his go. And I love it. It feels absolutely amazing. But sometimes I would just love for him to just say, let me just hold you, you know, or don't worry, you know, I'm here for you. Everything's going to be okay. But again, that's what Olga is talking about. That's me trying to control. Mm-hmm. I already know that he's not going to do that because that is not in his repertoire. Right. Now, if I say to him, hold me, then he automatically equates, I'm holding her because she's sad because, you know, her friend lost their job today and her friend was sad. So now she's sad. So he thinks every time that situation happens, you should hold you. Right. So 2 weeks, you know, from then, something else could happen that makes me sad and he won't hold me. And I'll say, well, why didn't you hold me? And he's like, well, I didn't know to hold you. But you hold me last week. Last week, you held me last week when my friend lost her job. And he'll be like, but your friend didn't lose her job this time.
Exactly.
You know, your cat died. So right. They don't transfer. No. They don't generalize it across different things.
Right. Right. And that's why, you know, everybody that I've talked to that is really trying to do the work and make the relationship thrive and thrive themselves as an individual, they're really trying to understand the neurodivergent language and the neurotypical language and to see how the two can it's like the two operating systems, how they can, how their software to translate. I think I posted something on Instagram about that. You know, what tool would you like in your toolbox? And I would have liked a translator that would immediately have translated to my ex what my emotions and my feelings meant in a language that he could understand. And I would have liked the translator to translate his silence and facial expressions, which he would look at me like, oftentimes, you're a crazy woman. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? That's what the facial expression told me. And I don't think that's what he meant. I think the facial expression was, I am friggin' clueless. You know, I have no idea where this came from. And I would like that translator. That would have been the best tool that I could have had in my toolbox.
If we could only have it.
I know.
And I want to say something because I know we laugh and but I think we mainly laugh ourselves, because when you don't understand something and you look back and think of what I was expecting of him, or, you know, how wrong things went because of what I was doing. It's just now funny because how am I going to expect something different when I did something that was not going to work? Mm-hmm. And a lot of, so just to be clear about, it's not laughing about what they do. It's more about us not understanding or not doing the craziness right thing that it means exactly.
The craziness of it. It's like if you have a car and it needs gasoline to run and you put corn syrup in it, you can't expect it to run, right? Yeah. And I would laugh about that. And that's why I laugh. I laugh because looking back now, I know I was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was absolutely ridiculous to expect things that I expected from my ex. Mm-hmm. And it's no fault of his. It's not because he isn't a wonderful man. He is a wonderful man. I'm a wonderful woman. We just speak the same language. And we didn't have the tools. We didn't have the Rosetta Stone. I said this on another episode. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the Rosetta Stone for neurodiverse couples. And we need to create that, Manisa and Olga.
Absolutely. I'm with you. So, and you know,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, from a behavior analyst standpoint, the science of our practice is called applied behavior analysis, ABA. And ABA says that when you have a behavior that you're trying to either increase or decrease, the first thing you have to do is find the function of the behavior. Why is it happening? And then once you're able to find out why it's happening, then you provide a replacement behavior that's more appropriate, but it has to serve the same function. Mm-hmm. And I think in a neurodiverse relationship, that's a missing piece. It's like we have these feelings because we want attention, we want validation, but the actions that we're getting don't match what we want. So therefore, our inappropriate behavior increases because we're still not getting what we want. I think, you know, once we found that common ground where what they're doing matches to what we need, then is when we have that, you know, the peace and the behavior. Our behavior tends to look different.
Yes.
Like my husband tells me all the time, he said, I really wish you felt that I love you. Mm. And I'll be honest and I'll tell him, I really wish I felt it too.
Mm.
I don't. I told him, I said, you're not mean to me. You don't beat me. You don't humiliate me. You don't tear me down with your words. I will never be able to say that about you. But if we were to end our marriage, I would tell everyone my husband took great care of me, but I would not be able to say that I felt like he loved me.
Wow.
So every time I say that, he drops his head like he's so disappointed.
Well, he I'm sure he feels like he failed.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to fix it.
Yeah. I think, Manisa, that is so powerful. It almost brought tears to my eyes. And what you just said, Olga, I think resonates so much with me and my ex. He tried so hard. I tried so hard. And we found out too late that we were neurodiverse and we just didn't have the tools. You know what? I remember my ex when I wanted to separate, and this might be emotional for some people. I know it'll be a little emotional for me. When I wanted to separate, he was devastated. He was absolutely devastated, but we did it. And then when I was talking about divorce, he said, I never cheated on you. I never abused you. You know, and he had a list of things he didn't do to me. And, you know, kind of what else,
like why?
What else could I have done? And at the time, we still didn't know we were neurodiverse then because we were separated for almost 2 years. And he's right. He didn't physically abuse me. He definitely neglected me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens in a lot of neurodiverse relationships. Neglect without, it's unintentional neglect. I keep using that word, unintentional.
Yes.
And I think that is what I saw as most hurtful. And I know I'm going to be in another neurodiverse relationship again. And so I need to be able to explain, or maybe not even explain, I need to be able to take care of those needs by myself. I'm doing it now. And I, maybe that's the adjustment that I need to make, Manisa and Olga, not to think that I can get that in a neurodiverse relationship, that I can get those needs mapped, that emotional reciprocity when I need it, but instead get that from my girlfriends and my other friends who give that to me all the time, and my daughter, and, you know, my sister. So I think that's a lesson for me. That's a lesson learned. Olga and Manisa, do you have a lesson learned or anything else you want to say before we close?
You know, I always say this to women. It's my little mantra. And I think like today is my soul is opening up today, because I've said this for so many years, but I'm feeling it now, I guess, because that's where I am in my marriage. But that statement is, you can either be miserable or stronger, but the amount of time is going to be the same. You Amen. Have to choose.
Amen.
You have to choose. You can be, we get 24 hours. You get to decide. You want to be miserable for 24 hours, or you want to be stronger for 24 hours.
Amen.
So.
Amen. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And
over. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, this topic leaves me with more questions than, I mean, I have some lessons learned, definitely. And I learned to be, after my relationship, my couple of relationships after that also ended, I learned more and more in more, with more intensity, that I needed to be responsible for my own happiness, whether I was by myself or with someone. And it gives me the feeling that going into another relationship, actually, it really doesn't matter if it's a neurodiverse relationship or not. The best way to go into it is almost like we're separated in the same space or in the same relationship, because that feeling of being separated is like, I'm still going to be me, individual, this individual just trying to continue the growth and the healing and her own path. But at the same time, we're sharing a space in life that we're sharing. We are walking together, but each one has a different path. And we may have a path together, but still keeping that separation so that it can be healthy. And I won't put things on him that I can get myself, and not make him responsible for something that he probably will not know that he's responsible for, and I probably will fail again.
Amen to both of you. Amen. And with that, we'll close out the episode today. You know, it's so exciting to talk to both of you. And Olga's going to be phasing out of the podcast and probably will come back periodically as a guest. And Manisa and I will move forward, and we will continue doing these episodes, and we will be having guests. So if you're interested in talking with us about your neurodiverse love relationship, or you're in the helping profession and you would like to share your experience with neurodiverse couples, we'd love to have you contact us. You can email us at neurodiverselove@gmail.com gmail.com, or you can, and then you can check out our website at neurodiverselove.com and follow me on Instagram at neurodiverse_love. And Manisa, do you want to share your Instagram or not?
Yeah, it's Exhale with Manisa. Awesome. Spelled just like that. Yeah, no special spelling. Exhale with Manisa.
And Manisa is M-A-N-E-C-I-A.
M-A-N-E-C-I-A, yes.
Awesome. So thank you all so much for tuning in. Please share the episode if you liked it with other folks you know that might be in a neurodiverse relationship or think they're in a neurodiverse relationship. And we'll see you again next time. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.